Chapter 6. "Hey, Joe," Skippy called out a few minutes later. "We've got trouble. Specifically, Margaret has trouble." "She is in danger?" "No. Well, maybe, I guess. She is in danger of not completing her mission."
"Is there anything we can do about it from up here?"
"No, not unless you are willing to blow the operation." In fact, my hand was poised over the transmit icon, ready to contact Sims and order her to jump Valkyrie into orbit.
"I am not. Not yet. Have you told her about it? And Smythe?"
"I'm talking with her and Smythe now." Carefully lifting my finger off the transmit button, because I didn't trust myself, I put that hand in my lap. "If Adams calls for help, we respond. If not, we do nothing."
"But, Joe, this is Margaret."
"No, right now she is Gunnery Sergeant Adams."
"You don't really believe that."
"Skippy, I have to act as if I believe it. So do you."
"But
if you care about her, you need to respect her."
"This sucks."
"It does. Give me the details."
"Uh-oh,"
Skippy said in her ear, with a "something is about to go wrong in a major way" tone in his voice.
Gunnery Sergeant Adams, you've got trouble coming your way."
"What trouble?" There were no threats showing in her visor. Until just then, when two red symbols appeared in the diagram of the building.
"Are those security guards?"
"They are supposed to be at their posts near the front door," she said with a calm that surprised her.
"They are supposed to be. One of them is going back to his post. The other is going up the stairs to settle a score with a prisoner. Sorry, they have been talking about it for a while. One of them just decided he wants to settle the score before the prisoners are sold and leave the planet."
"Shit. Can you recall him to his post?"
"That would look awfully suspicious. Only those two guards are supposed to have a view inside the building. Plus the officer in charge, but he is away from his post right now also. That's why the punk coming toward you chose this time to act."
There was nowhere to go, except back through the doorway to the roof or down the stairs to the first floor where she would be seen. The roof was not an option. If the lizard came even halfway down the corridor, he would see the lock on the door to the upper stairway had been cut out with a torch.
Torch.
The doors on the outside of the building were not as solidly secure as the two doors that led outside. They didn't need to be. Striding quickly toward the other end of the corridor, she pulled out her cutter and knelt by the door there.
Gunny, Skippy said. "If you try the door behind you, it might not be locked. No one is in that room, but it's stuffed full of junk, so be careful."
Cringing for not thinking about that, she reminded herself to be gentle with the doorknob, lest her powered gloves crush it. She said a silent prayer as she gripped the knob. Seeing the icon for the revenge-seeking security guard was only meters away from making the corner to go up the stairs. The doorknob turned easily, without a squeak. Nor did the hinges creak as she swung the door open just wide enough to... The room was piled to the ceiling with junk stacked on top of other junk. The only clear spot on the floor was wide enough for one boot, so she balanced awkwardly on that foot and closed the door, holding the doorknob so it was not latched.
"Skippy," she whispered, though her helmet muffled any sound from inside. "Where is Tony Montana going?"
"Tony? Oh, I get it. Good one. Two doors past you on the right."
"In case my sensors have a lag, let me know the instant he has passed this door."
"Affirmative." Skippy was generally keeping his responses short and professional. She appreciated that in a combat situation where chit-chat and his usual absent-mindedness could be dangerous. But she did miss the old Skippy, much as she hated to admit it. Her helmet speakers picked up the heavy tread of a Krestang warrior caste soldier climbing the stairs, then the slow thumping of his feet on the floor outside. It was a thumping, like he was stomping his feet. Of course. That sick asshole wanted the prisoners on the second floor to know he was coming, to fear that he might stop at their door. "Now," Skippy announced softly, as her helmet visor showed her the outline of a Krestang walking slowly past her door. Pulling the door open and carefully squeezing past it to place her free foot on the floor outside, she took two strides forward as the lizard, startled, turned around. Her hands were on either side of his head before he had eyes on her. She twisted hard. The sound of the lizard's thick neck snapping was loud. She hadn't expected that. Holding the body, she gently lowered it to the floor.
"Skippy, did the other guy react to that sound?" No. He probably thinks Tony Montana is beating up a prisoner. If the guy downstairs calls his buddy, I will pretend to be Tony. Adams, that gives you cover. I suggest you move. On it.
The explosives wired to collapse the building were in the basement.
Exactly where in the basement was a crucial piece of information that Skippy did not have. Sensor coverage of that area was non-existent. The explosives and their detonator cord had been set up by a work crew that left no records of their actions, and the basement was off limits to anyone other than an inspection team that checked the buildings twice a year. The last three reports about the explosives in that building listed a super helpful acceptable. Nothing else.
I see it, she whispered when she reached the bottom of the stairs.
There were no light sources in the basement. Presumably, anyone going down there was supposed to bring their own illumination. Unlike the worn and dingy upper floors of the building, the basement was clean by Kristang standards. Other than a few pieces of mechanical equipment for ventilation, the floor was completely clear. There was not anything conveniently labeled bomb. Then she looked up.
That, she swallowed and took a sip of water from the nipple in her helmet, is a lot of explosives.
Around the perimeter, the ceiling of the basement was packed with orange-red bricks, labeled in Kristang scripts. Each brick was connected to several sets of wires, plus two lines of detonator cord extending down to the underside of each brick.
Skippy?
I see it. Whew! You've really got a mess down there.
Suggestions?
You should get out of there.
I just got here. There are 9 people, 9 humans in this building.
Yes, but I just learned an interesting fact about them. The reason they all have individual rooms is as a reward for being collaborators. Those 9 people spied on their fellow prisoners and administered punishments to anyone they thought was not properly subservient to their Kristang masters. 5 of them have used their positions of authority to abuse women in ways I don't want to talk about.
I hear you.
She gritted her teeth, wishing she had snapped their necks also. That explained why her building held only 9 people. The other buildings held far more people and been assigned 2-person teams. Margaret was alone not only because the target was relatively unimportant. It was a sign of Smythe's faith in her abilities and judgment. Good. If the building blows, the lizards will be performing a public service, Skippy said without humor.
No.
No? Those people are criminals. War criminals.
They should be subjected to justice by their peers. By us.
Looking up at the bricks of explosives, she reported to her team leader.
Colonel Smythe, I have a problem. There is no single point of failure for the Det Cord.
2 other buildings are like that, the Star leader reported. The Det Cord is in a conduit above the explosive bricks. That was not good news.
Suggestions, sir?
She had already rejected Skippy's plea for her to declare she couldn't handle the job. Skippy spoke first.
I strongly suggest you don't touch anything down there until I can scan the conduit network above you.
I concur, Smythe said. Adams, be careful. Your building holds only 9 keepers. They are not worth your life.
Yes, Colonel.
3 minutes later, after she walked a grid across the floor, using her helmet sensors to scan the explosives, Skippy muttered to himself loud enough for her to hear.
Yep, yep, we got ourselves a real mess here.
Okay. Whew! Can it be done?
Yes. You need to remove 16 bricks, very carefully. Then you can cut the 2 conduits containing the Det Cord.
Which bricks?
They are outlined in your visor. Gunny, you must pull down each brick, but do not pull out the detonators.
I should leave the bricks hanging from the wires? She asked, unbelieving.
No, as you remove each brick, use the spray adhesive on your tool belt to stick them to another brick. Once the conduits are exposed, I will walk you through how to neutralize the Det Cord.
It was easy to say, simple to explain, difficult to do. The ceiling was 3 meters above her. She had no way to reach that high. There was not a ladder or a box or anything else she could stand on in the basement. She did have a rappelling line and a winch on her Batman tool belt. Thankfully, the thick beams that held up the ceiling were exposed, so she leapt up to hang on with one hand.
Working with her free hand, she got the line wrapped around the beam and used the winch to pull herself up to hang beneath the bricks.
Skippy, are you sure you know this will work?
Yes.
Yes? No shmaybe, or it should work?
The answer is yes. It is relatively simple. Please be careful. You are now 18 seconds behind schedule, but two other teams are also behind schedule.
Skippy is correct, Gunnery Sergeant, Smythe added. Time is not the critical factor.
Got it.
With all 8 bricks removed and glued to other bricks in a mess that reminded her of a school project many years ago, she had the conduit exposed.
Okay, Skippy told her. Wrap the freeze blanket around it.
That's right, he said encouragingly.
Ready?
Do it.
The blanket, which was really more of a slick plastic sheet the size of a hand towel, crinkled, and its surface instantly became covered with frost from moisture in the air as the inner surface of the blanket chilled to 120 below 0 Celsius.
That did it, Skippy announced happily. The det cord in that section is inert.
Great.
She unwrapped the line holding her to the ceiling. Removing those 8 bricks had consumed 4 minutes and 18 seconds, far too long. The next set of bricks should go faster now that she knew how to do it. Letting herself drop lightly to the floor, she fixed her eyes on the section of bricks on the other side of the basement.
Uh-oh. Shit, you've got trouble.
We have trouble.
What is it?
Smythe asked before she could. The guy at the workstation near the door has been calling Tony Montana with increasing concern. I have been pretending to be Tony and making noises upstairs like he is giving a prisoner a beatdown, but the guy in the lobby is panicking. That is because a supervisor is making one of his unscheduled nightly inspections and he is coming to your building first.
Smythe didn't hesitate.
Adams, get out of there.
But, sir, no arguments. Out. Now.
On the way.
Wait, Skippy pleaded.
There is no time.
The guy in the lobby just got up and is looking down the corridor, shouting for Tony to get his ass downstairs. If you come out the basement door, he will see you.
I can take him out.
She unslung her rifle and switched off the safeties.
Hold, Smythe ordered. Skippy, is the guard at the workstation?
Yes.
It won't work, Adams, the star leader declared. Their work areas are behind thick sheets of clear composite. Rifle rounds would be deflected unless you used armor-piercing mode, and that is too loud. It would blow the entire operation.
Well, you need to do something, Skippy shouted, close to panicking.
The supervisor will be there in less than 1 minute.
Oh,
the guard in the lobby is stepping out of the workstation area.
This is my chance, sir.
Adams put a boot on the second stair.
No, wait, Skippy groaned. He's gone back inside.
Sir, Adams repeated. I can't stay down here.
No, you can't, Skippy agreed. As soon as Tony's body is discovered, the supervisor will sound the alarm over the base network. When that transmission fails, he will pull the cord near the door to activate strobe lights and sonic alarms all over the base.
That will blow the operation, Smythe said through clenched teeth.
The last 2 teams estimate they need 4 minutes to complete their tasks. Skippy, can you lock the door so the supervisor can't get in?
Geez, I could try.
That door lock is electronic, but there is a manual backup, so...
Adams backed down the stairs.
No, let the supervisor come in.
Gunnery Sergeant? Smythe was concerned.
What are you planning?
Nothing stupid, sir. I've got this. I will get us those 4 minutes.
Colonel Smythe, Green said in an urgent whisper.
He was on top of a warehouse at the edge of the fenced compound that held the human prisoners. Concealed under stealth netting, he had a view covering 3/4 of the dormitory buildings. Green was the team's lone reserve, the only person not disconnecting explosives inside the basement of a dormitory. He had been sweeping the rifle scope from one side of the compound to the other with nothing to do until Skippy announced that a Kristang supervisor was making an unannounced visit to the building Adams was assigned to clear.
That lizard is approaching Objective Kilo. Adams is alone in there.
Adams has the situation well in hand, Green, Smythe replied, his voice containing a trace of irritation.
Sir, I can take that lizard out from here.
He verified the range to target with his rifle scope, checking that he had selected an inert round with low muzzle velocity.
Negative. He is in the open. If you drop him, the body will be noticed.
We need you providing cover from your position.
Green took a moment to breathe in through his nose while he considered the situation. Questioning an order on an open channel was not done, period. The only exception was if the commander was not aware of a vital piece of information. Lamar thought he could get to the building before the lizard reached the door, but surely Smythe had access to the same data and had already made a judgment call. Adams was alone. She was in danger. He had lost her once before due to his inaction. If he failed to act right then, she might lose her life. The purpose of his being on top of the warehouse was to deal with threats to the entire team, not just one person. He could pretend he had not heard the complete order and asked for confirmation. Smythe would know that was bullshit, and Green would lose the trust he was trying to build with the Star team leader. He had not served with the Stars. Adams had. She trusted Smythe. If only for that reason, he should trust the Star leader.
Understood, sir, he told Smythe. Holding position.
He held the rifle scope's crosshairs on the supervisor while that lizard strode quickly across the open area between buildings of the compound. One gentle squeeze of the trigger is all it would take to end the threat to Margaret. Maybe the prone body of the supervisor would be noticed in the next 4 minutes and blow the whole operation. Maybe not. He lifted his finger off the trigger, cursing himself for indecision. The supervisor walked up the steps of the building, designated objective Kilo, and punched numbers on the keypad. In seconds, he would be inside, and Green would have no ability to affect the outcome. No way to help Margaret. The door swung open, and the supervisor walked inside.
Shit, Green cursed, his helmet microphone off.
There were not any other lizards in sight. He was useless on top of the warehouse, while Margaret was in danger of...
Green, Skippy whispered in his ear.
Trouble at 2 o'clock. A lizard will be coming out of the guard barracks to Objective Lima. He heard the supervisor is performing an unscheduled inspection. He wants to assure his team there is alert.
Green swung the muzzle of his rifle back to the barracks, torn by indecision.
Why doesn't he just call his team?
Because the supervisor is monitoring all their communications. Listen, the lizard will be going around the back of the building so the supervisor can't see him. That alley is dark and narrow. If you drop them there, no one will notice until it is too late.
The side door of the barracks opened, and a figure dashed out, keeping low. I see him.
Shit!
What?
Nothing.
He had hesitated before, waited too long. He could not help Margaret, but he could prevent the second roaming lizard from interfering with Frey and Chaudhry at Objective Lima.
Colonel Smythe? You are clear to fire, Green, the Star leader ordered.
In the center of the basement, Margaret Adams lay on her back, her rifle aimed at the ceiling.
I hear something, she whispered. Footsteps? And raised voices?
Yes, Skippy confirmed. That is the supervisor. He is standing outside the workstation area, demanding to know where Tony is. The guy in the lobby just threw Tony under a bus.
Okay, now the guard is opening the door. Going out in the corridor. They are both standing there.
Wow, that supervisor is really giving the guard an ass-chewing.
I need to write down some of those curse words. They are quite unique.
Ah, yes, they are walking down the corridor now. The supervisor is in front. Do you see them?
Yes, I see them.
The synthetic view in her visor showed the two Krestang approaching as if the floor beneath them was transparent. Skippy was feeding her suit computer a composite view from the cameras on the first floor.
Ready. Do you... Quiet, please.
The figures walked quickly toward the spot she had selected. In the lead, the figure strode quickly but with authority.
Not rushing. One foot in front of the other.
Behind and to the right, the other figure fairly danced. She could imagine the hapless guard pleading with his supervisor. Whatever form of non-judicial punishment the Krestang administered, that jackass had it coming. But first, the two lizards had something else coming, at 316 meters per second. Adams had programmed her rifle to fire first an inert armor-piercing round at medium velocity to penetrate the floor and clear a hole for the following round.
The first round punched through the floor. The guard's right foot skimmed his kneecap and entered his right pectoral muscle before striking his jaw and exiting near his right ear.
The round in flight, a split second behind, was explosive-tipped, set to anti-personnel fragmentation mode with the yield dialed down near minimum. It skimmed one side of the hole in the floor and corrected its course to impact the guard in the chest, exploding with a sickeningly wet splat. Half a second later, she shifted to the lead target. The purpose of taking out the guard in the rear first was that if she missed, the supervisor would have farther to travel back to the door and would have to jump over the sagging body of the dead guard. A single, gentle squeeze of the trigger initiated another double tap, this time leading the target a little in anticipation of him being startled by the sound behind him. Her judgment had been right. The supervisor suffered the loss of most of his head, and his body toppled forward to thump on the floor.
"Result?" she asked, slowly releasing a breath.
"Two down," Skippy reported. "That first armor-piercing round went clear through the second floor and lodged in the underside of the roof. Prisoners heard the noise, and they're all screaming, but nobody can hear them outside the building." Heaving herself off the floor and to her feet in one smooth motion, she engaged both the rifle safeties.
"Did anyone outside the building hear the shot?"
"Negative. I barely heard it through the acoustic sensors of the base headquarters building, and those sensors are not alerting anyone, that's for sure. Good shooting, Gunny."
"Colonel Smythe," she called. "Objective Kilo is secure."
"Outstanding," Smythe said. "Adams, that was a jolly good show. Stand by."
She slung her rifle.
"I still have work to do. Skippy, talk me through removing that other set of bricks."
"I could do that. Or you could go to the guard's workstation and disable the det cord ignition mechanism from there. It's your call."
"Let's do it the easy way."
Green waited until, just as Skippy said, the second Kristang ran down a dark alley between dormitories. To prevent any loose humans from having a place to take cover, the alley was clear other than a trash dumpster, and the lizard veered to go around that obstruction. Just as he passed the overflowing dumpster, Green gently pressed the trigger of his rifle. A round was spat out at only 600 kilometers per hour, the rifle's active silencer mechanism reducing the sound to a barely audible puff. The round's warhead was inert, the seeker tip adjusting its flight to track the moving target. When the round flew within 1 meter of the target, the tip mushroomed into a blunt shape in the air, and it smacked into the target's neck at the base of his skull. There was a wet thump sound, and a startled gasp from the target as he toppled forward, his spine broken. Green had another round ready.
"Skippy, I can only see his legs from here."
That was the disadvantage of waiting until the target went past the dumpster. The advantage was the body was barely visible from the main area of the compound. "No pulse," according to his phone. "Scratch one lizard. That was good shooting." The AI gave rare praise. Green let out a slow breath.
"Status of Adams?"
"She is fine. She took out two lizards by shooting through the basement ceiling. Shame on you, Gunnery Sergeant. You should have more faith in her."
"That's easy to say now," he retorted. "Do the lizards have any more surprises for us?"
"No. Smythe is contacting Bishop now." 7 minutes later, Smythe called me.
"Colonel Bishop, all target buildings have been secured. We are not presently able to get access to the base hospital, where two of the keepers are receiving medical treatment."
"Roger that," I said.
"Fireball," I called Samantha Reed. "You're up. It's showtime."
The two Panthers, wrapped in stealth fields and with their engines leaving an infrared signature barely bigger than a hummingbird, approached from the southeast. The heat sinks of both aerospace craft were near capacity from absorbing the thermal output of the engines. Skippy had argued that his control of the planet's defense network made it very unlikely for anyone on the ground to detect the faint heat trails behind the Panthers. But Sammy declared that since his sorry ass wasn't flying the dropships, she would use her own judgment. Besides, it was good to practice maximum stealth maneuvers against a soft target like the Kristang, so they would be better prepared if they had to infiltrate a world controlled by an advanced technology species. That thought made her smile. Not that long ago, the thought of an operation against a well-defended Kristang planet would have made the merry band of pirates terrified, even if none of them would admit it. Now, the presence of explosives in the buildings housing the keepers was the major obstacle to the operation. The lizards were merely a minor annoyance. They were not actually even a threat to the pirates. The only concern was that the warrior caste soldiers on the base might kill some of the keepers, or pose a risk to the dropships while they were coming in to set down. With the threat of explosives no longer a factor, it was time to take action against the threat that remained. The aircraft hangars of the military base were just visible as the two dropships flew just above the treetops. In the east, the sky was developing a faint rosy tinge. The local sun would be rising within an hour, and that meant the base would be awakening to start the day. At the moment, the barracks were full of sleeping soldiers.
"Chen," she called the pilot flying the other Panther. "Launch on my mark. 3, 2, 1, mark."
Doors retracted in the base of the thick wings, and missiles were spat out the rear to gently fall until they cleared the stealth fields. The missiles sprouted wings, and turbine engines spun up to 1/3 power, pushing the weapons through the air at a moderate speed, the missiles on front slowing for the trailing units to catch up. Seeing 16 missiles in the air and tracking true toward their targets, Sammy advanced the throttles and followed the missiles in. The missiles diverged as they approached their individual targets, adjusting speed so they all would arrive on target at the same second. A lucky soldier, unable to sleep because of his loudly snoring squadmates, was up and walking across the parade field when he heard a low-pitched humming sound from above. Looking up in the darkness with his genetically enhanced eyes, but without the advantage of the synthetic vision provided by goggles, he thought there was a shape passing in front of a star, but he only wondered what type of local bird was flying so early. By looking up, he was not looking where he placed his feet, stumbled in a rut, and fell full length on the dew-covered grass. That fall saved his life. All around him, barracks buildings, aircraft hangars, autogun emplacements, missile launchers, and sensor towers erupted in flames, the sound making the ground under him shake, and he covered his ears as he hugged the grass, cursing the Theranin who surely had perpetrated the crime.
"BDA, Skippy," I asked. The display in front of me showed the battle damage all over the base, and that was great. It could not tell me what was not obvious. For that assessment, I relied on Mr. Magnificent.
"A total triumph as usual, Joe," he said over a fake yawn. "Really, this is getting too easy for me. Maybe next time I should allow you monkeys to handle the targeting."
"We did handle the targeting, you ass."
"Sure, but not the fine last-minute adjustments."
"Stick to the subject, please. What opposition does Smythe need to worry about?"
"I estimate about 170 personnel survived on the base. Not all of them are soldiers, of course, and many of them will not have access to weapons. The only real threat are the 45 guards in their barracks, plus the guards in the prisoner dormitories."
The lizards assigned to the undesirable duty as guards for the captive humans were housed in a separate barracks right in the middle of the cluster of windowless dormitories which held the keepers. We could not risk a missile strike on that barracks. So the plan called for Reed and Chen's Panthers to follow right behind the missiles and take out the barracks with precision maser fire. A quick check of the tactical display showed the location of every person we had on the ground. None of them were in danger from friendly fire.
"Fireball, you are clear to engage."
When the missile strike devastated the base in the blink of an eye, Captain Katie Frey had been impatiently waiting at the top of the basement stairs in the dormitory she was assigned to clear. Unlike Adams, she had not encountered any surprises, other than the tangled pile of junk that was revealed when she opened the roof hatch.
She had judged there was no way to clear a path through that junk without it toppling over, falling down, and causing a tremendous noise that would alert everyone in the building, if not farther.
The backup plan was to cut a hole through the roof, down through the ceiling of the third floor, and gain access there. Skippy thought he knew of an unoccupied third-floor room, but there were no cameras in that area, so he couldn't be certain. Drilling a hole and threading a fine sensor wire through had revealed the room was indeed empty. And by empty, it actually was. No jackass had stuffed it full of unwanted crap. Since she and Chaudhry dropped through the hole they had cut in the roof, the operation had gone smoothly. No cowboy lizard leaving his post to amuse himself by abusing prisoners. Cutting through the det cord on the basement ceiling had been quick and simple. A different team must have installed the explosives, or they had gotten lazy by that point. Having to cut through the roof had put Frey and Chaudhry behind schedule, though no more than allowed for. Then they waited, rifles ready, safeties off. The explosion of missiles was their cue to act.
No order from Smythe was needed. At the rumbling sound of warheads exploding, Frey yanked the door open and ran through, with Havildar Chaudhry right on her heels. 6 long, power-assisted strides had them to the end of the corridor, and they pivoted to the right, in clear view of the guard's workstation. 2 guards were standing, looking toward the front door and jabbering to each other, not noticing the actual danger.
The ongoing thump of submunitions covered the sound and vibration of heavy mech suit boots pounding on the floor.
Just as Frey aimed her rifle and triggered the undermounted rocket launcher, one lizard turned away from the door and saw the flash of the rocket's exhaust. Too late. The rocket's nose cone impacted the clear composite windows around the workstation, and the tough material shattered from sheer kinetic energy, leaving a path for the nose cone to burst open. The warhead was set to anti-personnel fragmentation mode. Razor-sharp pieces were flung outward in a wide cone at supersonic speed to shred both guards. Without slowing at all, the stars ran forward to look through the shattered windows. Clear, Chaudhry made the call, not needing to rely on her helmet sensors to determine the enemy were dead. The guards had been sliced and diced into a sort of lizard stew. It didn't take a medical expert to determine those two were no threat to the pirates, unless they removed their helmets and gagged on the smell of barbecued lizard.
Objective Lima is secure, Frey reported.
Hold your position, Smythe ordered over the sound of gunfire. Then the sound cut off abruptly. Whatever he was doing, it was done.
The Airedales are inbound,